37. Freshly chewed meat. Modo was enjoying a handful of berries from a woven palm leaf basket. The basket was still wet, as though the berries had been soaked. They were both bitter and sweet, bursting on his tongue. Next, the women brought cooked meat on a large wooden platter. The meat was pale in colour and tasted something like salted and smoked duck or chicken, he couldn't decide which. There was also fish. The tribe didn't seem to want to boil him alive or slice him into ribbons. They had chased him through the forest, but they couldn't be blamed for that. After all, he'd fallen out of the sky and invaded their land. He had wept, of all things, with all those eyes on him. And aside from their initial hesitation, they didn't seem to be staring in revulsion. Quite the contrary. They seemed to adore him. He smiled and shook his head. "This is all very lovely," he said. "Very, very lovely." He patted his stomach to signal his happiness, and one of the pregnant women rubbed her own and giggled. Of course they didn't understand a word he said, but he hoped the tone of his voice conveyed his friendliness. They'd likely never seen a civilized man before. The young girl, Nulu, was the one who fed him first, and he instinctively trusted her. The remainder of the tribe were growing more comfortable and muttering among themselves, again pointing at him with their pinkies. He'd read so many accounts of savages and how ruthless they could be. The men had weapons, of course, but he saw that there were frail and vulnerable tribespeople too. A few old men, a toothless old woman who appeared to be blind, small children, one with a limp. If they were savages, why hadn't they abandoned the old and crippled ones to the crocodiles? "Please join me," he offered the food around. "Please." Nulu was the first to take something off the platters, choosing a long piece of cooked, stringy flesh. She chewed it, then removed it from her mouth and handed it to an old woman, who swallowed it. How revolting! But many of the children were doing the same for other aged tribespeople. These elders were clearly toothless and wouldn't survive without the aid of their grandchildren's good teeth. So disgusting, but kind, too. He pictured doing the same for Mr. Socrates when he got old, and chuckled. Several children giggled along with him. Remembering his master reminded him that he had a mission to complete. He needed to finish eating and get on with his assignment. Modo examined his wounded hand, and was pleased to see that the stub of his little finger had stopped bleeding, thanks to the leaves wrapped tightly around it. The pain had softened to a dull ache. It would soon be dark. Best to move along as far as he could before nightfall, much as part of him wanted to stay here forever. "I thank you for your food and hospitality, but I must go now." They gawked at him as he brought out his compass and held it to see which direction was northwest. Thank goodness he'd memorized the map. They hadn't crossed the main river by air, so he would still be on the east side of it. If Mr. Socrates was anywhere, he'd be heading toward the temple right now. Unless he'd crashed and they were all dead or captured. If that was so, it would be impossible to say where they were. If Modo found the temple, at the very least he could later find the nearest port, for the map had shown its location clearly. "Again, I thank you." Modo bowed toward the tribe, turned, and walked away. They parted for him, and he wondered if it could be that easy to leave. Sure enough, as one, they rose and walked silently behind him in a long line. Modo stopped. This wouldn't do. He couldn't have them tramping through the forest behind him. But wait, was there a way to get them to take him to the temple? The warriors were armed, and there were 15 of them. What if Miss Hakandottir had a camp? If they stumbled on it, perhaps they could fall on the guild soldiers and kill them. And how many of these tribesmen would die? Just to rescue him. He waved his hand. "You must stay. Go back." No one moved. He went to the nearest one and pointed him in the opposite direction. Then he pointed another. Finally, Nulu approached to him with a basket of food. She held it up to him. He stood there because he was already stuffed, feeling dumb as a post, until it dawned on him that she wanted him to take the food. He filled his pockets. Then, as one, the tribespeople turned away. Modo trod through the forest. It wasn't until he'd walked for 2 hours that he was certain he'd left the tribe behind. With each step, it felt as though he were walking away from a dream. That was all it could be. Though at first there'd been some fear, mostly those natives had looked at him with joy. How could they be real? It began to rain. Soon he was a soggy mess, his tattered cloak a weight on his back. He took it off and squeezed it dry, then carried it under his arm. He crossed a small stream, watching for serpents or any sharp-toothed animals. He wished again that he'd been able to learn the flora and fauna, especially the creatures that would either eat him or poison him, or both. He'd stay away from toads. He didn't know if it was here or in Africa where there were poisonous toads whose touch alone would kill you. And then there were the alligators. Or was it crocodiles? One or the other lived here. "Maybe you can ask them to introduce themselves when they bite your leg off," he whispered. He munched on a few berries from his front vest pocket, followed them with some smoked meat. The sun set quite suddenly, as though someone had just blown out a candle. He couldn't see much beyond all the vines and leaves. He hadn't thought this through very well. For one thing, where would he sleep? On the forest floor? Up in a tree with the snakes and the monkeys? One of those huts he'd just left would be handy now. He didn't dare light a fire for fear of alerting Miss Hackendotty to his presence, so he slept with his back up against a tree, legs pressed as close to his chest as possible for warmth. It was a horrible, buggy, cold, fitful mockery of sleep. But when he awoke as the light appeared in the east, shining yellowish-green through the leaves, he found that a fur blanket had been laid over him, and someone had placed a basket of berries at his feet without making a noise or leaving a footprint. He whispered his thanks and ate his breakfast. Then he got up, stretched his aching muscles, and began to follow his compass.